So first of all, let me thank Luca for giving me the opportunity to present my research in this seminar. And my talk, the title of my talk is Vile Pfefferman-Graham Asymptotic Symmetries, and we will see in a few moments what we are going to see in this talk. So it is based on a paper that we published 3 months ago with Luca, Romain, and Céline, and that will appear soon, I hope, on GEP, on PLD. Okay, so let me start with some plan and motivation on this talk. And, well, the main idea is that I guess, like everyone in this audience, we are interested in describing, well, or in understanding the quantum theory of gravity. And the way that we choose in this talk to understand this maybe a bit more is to probe the ADS-CFT correspondence by studying the classical phase space of asymptotically ADS gravity. And to remind you to feature the classical phase space of ADS, it essentially amounts to select the allowed metric fluctuations at infinity, or in other words, to impose some boundary conditions on the metric. Okay, and in this way, you can use the framework of charges and also the covariant phase space formalism to use the second order theorem that will give you a prescription that will establish if a symmetry is a physical asymptotic symmetry or not by studying if this asymptotic symmetry, which in gravity form the subgroup of Burke diffeomorphisms that will preserve the boundary conditions that you have imposed on the metric. And this Burke diffeomorphism needs to have an non-vanishing Noether charges with respect to this Noether second theorem. So the fact that if you want to classify the asymptotic symmetries of ADS, it's really important in the holographic principle, since it will give you access to the global symmetry of the dual conformal field theory. It's also important to study such charges for the asymptotic symmetries because, well, these charges will live on a support, on a codimension to support that we will call corners. And there is the corner proposal that proposes that to loose ties of some classical nation that will not survive in the quantum, in the quantum geometrification of the theory. Okay, but as for example, the boundary conditions or the classical phase spans or the gauge that you will need will not survive in such, will not survive in the quantum regime. But the corner proposal proposed that the corners and the charges will survive in such a quantification of the theory. And so it will give you access to an organizing principle for contour observables. And in this talk, we will focus for these asymptotic symmetries on three-dimensional gravity. Well, the first idea of three-dimensional gravity, it is that it is really simple, so it's a perfect playground to study some gravitational physics. Indeed, despite the fact that there is no propagation of degrees of freedom, there is still the presence of black holes, as described by BTZ, where they identify 2 points of ADS to have a real black hole with the properties of a black hole. And the second important point of 3D gravity is that you have an asymptotic symmetry enhancement with respect to the vacuum isometries. And it was described in the seminal paper of Brown and Eno in 86, where they obtained that if you take ADS with Dirichlet boundary conditions at the conformal boundary, you will have that your algebra of charges will be a centrally double extended Virasoro algebra. And this algebra has been later interpreted as the modes of the stress energy momentum tensor in the conformal theory. And this is a rich instance of the ADS safety correspondence that appears 10 years later. Okay, so as I've just said at the beginning, the way that we will study the classical phase space is to select the allowed metric fluctuations at infinity. And in order to do such a step, in principle, there is no requirement to fix any particular gauge. But it is often convenient to opt for a given gauge and discuss a reduced set of components only. For example, the two main gauges, the two mainstream gauges in the literature, are the Fefferman-Graham and the Bondi ones. And in this talk, we will focus more on the Fefferman-Graham, and we will see a relaxation of this gauge in such a way that if you go back to the usual Fefferman-Graham setup, you will restrict your physical contents. And it is based on the main result of the asymptotic symmetry theory that stipulates that charge diffeomorphism maps in equivalent physical configurations. And so the symmetries that you can use to gauge fix, for example, to go to Fefferman-Graham or Bondi setups, can be charged. And in this talk, we will focus on the Weyl-Fefferman-Graham relaxation of the Fefferman-Graham setup. And we will see that there is some interesting applications for holography. Is there any question for the moment? Okay. So in the first part of the talk, we will focus on a review of the Fefferman-Graham asymptotic symmetries as it was studied, well, 1 year ago, until 1 year ago. And then we will focus on the Weyl-Fefferman-Graham relaxation that we discuss in the paper with Luca, Romain, and Céline. Okay, so let's review first the Fefferman-Graham theorem. And it stipulates that in three dimensions, well, it is valid for any dimension, but here we will focus on 3D. You can write any asymptotically ADS-3 space near the boundary with this metric, where rho is a space-like coordinate such that rho going to 0 will locate the boundary, and xi are the boundary coordinates such that x1 is time-like and x2 is space-like. And if you look at the expansion of the radial expansion of this Hij structure, you will have that the leading order in your expansion will describe the boundary geometry. And in the next slides, we will focus on some boundary conditions that we will impose on this setup that is based on the conformal completion à la Penrose. And in this conformal geometric construction of Penrose, you have that the boundary data of ADS are located at infinity. And it is based on the fact that you have a second order pole structure that is typical in ADS. And if you want to go to pass this issue, you can multiply the metric by this function omega, such that omega is a positive function with a simple zero on the boundary. And so in this way, you will cancel the pole, and you can induce the metric on the boundary. But there is an ambiguity in the choice of omega. In fact, if you make this type of replacement, it will induce a conformal transformation of the boundary metric, where sigma is a function of the boundary coordinates and independent of the radial coordinate. Okay, so it means that in ADS, you can only define a boundary conformal class of metric at the boundary rather than a peculiar metric. Okay, so we will use this type of conformal completion construction to impose some boundary conditions on our setup. So first, let us focus on the solution space that we can obtain in this Fefferman-Graham ansatz. And in 3D, if you solve the Einstein equations, you will obtain a finite expansion for the Hij structure, such that Hij, the leading order, will describe the boundary geometry. And the Hij2 will be related to, will be constrained by the leading order as well as the fourth order. And you can also see that if you look at the Balasubramanian cross method to obtain a holographic description in terms of a stress energy tensor, you will have that the stress energy energy momentum tensor will live in the second order of the radial expansion. Okay. And so you can define your stress tensor in this way, such that it will be conserved. But you can see here that its stress will not vanish. In fact, it will vanish if you impose some Dirichlet boundary condition. And it was this type of boundary condition that was proposed by Brown and Eno in 86. Well, it was not exactly the same setup. But if you rewrite this theory in terms of the asymptotic symmetries, in these classical terms, you will obtain these Dirichlet boundary conditions. So it means that in the boundary metric, what Born and Eno imposed is that you will just obtain the flat metric. But what was proposed by Francesco, Glenn, Luca Puyan, and Romain 3 years ago was to relax these boundary conditions based on this conformal completion and impose only that. Since your boundary is in two dimensions, you can always rewrite it as a conformally flat metric. Let me also mention that there was also another boundary conditions discussed by Cédric Trossard, where he discussed not a generic conformal factor, but a combination of a chiral and anti-chiral parts. Okay. So with this setup, we can study after that the residual symmetries, since in this gauge is not complete gauge fixing, but a partial gauge fixing. So you still have some residual symmetries that you can study by looking at which diffeomorphism we preserve the boundary conditions and the gauge fixing conditions. And so with this setup, you will obtain these two vectors. These vectors, where the y will be associated to the boundary diffeomorphism, and the omega will be related to the Weyl rescalings. And why we can see that it will be the Weyl rescalings? In fact, it will be the sigma that will be the Weyl rescalings, because if you look at the transformations of the boundary metric under such diffeomorphism, you'll obtain that your boundary metric will transform in this way. Under this transformation. Yes. So it means that this sigma gauge parameter induce the Weyl transformations of the on the boundary. Okay, then we can also discuss what is the algebra that is enclosed by this diffeomorphism by looking at the Lie bracket of these vectors. And since in this diffeomorphism you have some field dependence, for example here in terms of the conformal factor, you have to take into account this field dependence by modifying your Lie bracket, where here the square bracket are just the standard Lie brackets. And so in this case, you will obtain that you will have a double copy of the Witt algebra, which is just the usual diffeomorphism on the circle at the boundary. And you will have also this indirect sum with a U1 algebra that will be given by the Weyl transformations. And then you can look at the gauge transformations for your field that will appear in your solution space. Here, for example, for the conformal factor, it will only transform under sigma. And if you look at L plus and minus, that are just two chiral and anti-chiral functions, that will appear here in the second order of the radial expansions, you will obtain that it will transform as the modes of the stress and energy momentum tensor of an anomalous 2D CFT. Okay.
So the L are coefficient of the stress energy momentum tensor.
Yes, it will appear in the stress energy momentum tensor, yes. Okay. So after that, you can also look at your Vaishana principle. And well, we define your action, which is just here the Einstein-Hilbert action, and here the Gibbons-Hawking-York boundary term. And if you look at this type of action, you'll obtain that if one approaches the boundary, it will diverge. So it was discussed by Skenderis and collaborator that you have to incorporate in this action such a boundary term in order to ensure the finiteness of your action. Where here we have that n mu is the normal to the rho constant hypersurface, gamma is the induced metric on this hypersurface, and K is the extrinsic curvature. Okay, so with this construction, you have a renormalized action, and then you can discuss what is the on-shell variation of this action. And you will obtain an holographic description in terms of the delta of the sources multiplied by the VEV, the associated VEV. And here the source is given by the conformal boundary, and the VEV is the stress energy momentum tensor. And if you rewrite this renormalized action, on-shell renormalized action, in terms of the conformal gauge, so in this setup here, you can rewrite this action in these terms. So you can see that it will not vanish if you impose weaker conditions than Dirichlet boundary conditions. So in all cases where we have a conformally flat boundary metric, it will not vanish. And in fact, if you look at this transfer, at this variation under the Weyl geomorphism, it will unveil the presence of a Weyl anomaly, since your variation of the action will not vanish under the Weyl geomorphism. Okay. Is it good for you for the moment? Okay. So after that, we can also discuss what are the asymptotic charges associated to our boundary, our Burke diffeomorphism. So the boundary diffeomorphism, the Y, and also the Weyl transformation generated by the sigma. And in order to do that, you can look at your renormalized on-shell variation of the renormalized action that will give you access to the renormalized presymplectic potential. And after that, by taking an arbitrary variation, you have access to the presymplectic current. And if you evaluate it on the different diffeomorphisms that you generate and integrate on the Cauchy surface, you can obtain the surface charges associated to this diffeomorphism, to these residual symmetries. And here you will obtain here the charges associated to the boundary diffeomorphism, and here the charge associated to the Weyl transformation. And so you can see that your charge is finite, integrable, but non-conserved. But the non-conservation comes from this fact, and also from the fact that you have symplectic flux that will go through the boundary, which is associated to the Weyl anomaly, etc. And then what you want to discuss also in order to, if you want to go to a quantum theory of gravity, you want to have access to the charges as well as the charge algebra in order to describe your observables in the dual theory. And so you obtain that in this case, the charge algebra, if you look at the Poisson bracket of your charges, where here you have the charge associated to here the modified Lie bracket, and here you will obtain a central extension. And in this case, we will obtain a double copy of the Virasoro algebra, and also in direct sum with an Heisenberg algebra that is generated by the conformal factor on its first derivative.
So the non-conservation you're saying comes from the phi. The phi is
yes.
On time, and this is.
Yeah, exactly. And if you impose some weaker conditions on phi, for example, that is a combination of a chiral and anti-chiral part, you will have a conserved charge with respect to the time. And in Brown-Eno, you have that phi vanish, so you don't have also this problem. Okay. So now let's go back to the Weyl transformation that we have seen during the last few slides. Also in the literature, let me mention that it is also referred sometimes to Penrose-Brown-Eno transformations. And under such a transformation that we have seen, if you want to induce such a radial rescaling on the radial rescaling on your radial coordinate, it will impose that you have a mix with the transverse components, in the sense that it will, as we have seen, it will impact the transverse components by this type of vector, and this vector that will vanish at the boundary will impact the subleading terms in all FG expansions in such a way that it will not transform Weyl covariantly under such a Weyl transformations on the boundary. And so this means that the Pfefferman-Graham gauge, despite the fact that it is really useful in the ADS-CFT correspondence, it breaks the Weyl covariantly. It breaks the Weyl covariance on the boundary by inducing rather the Levi-Civita connection on the boundary. And so to overcome this issue, there was a solution proposed by Luca and Rob 4 years ago in the way to relax this Pfefferman-Graham ansatz to the Weyl Pfefferman-Graham one. And this this relaxation stipulates that you have to incorporate this new structure in your line element. And if you study again the radial expansion of your new chi-i structure, you will have that the leading order will describe a boundary Weyl connection. But we will see in more details how we can see that from the Weyl Pfefferman-Graham ansatz. But let me already make some spoiler on the advantages of this Weyl Pfefferman-Graham ansatz. The two main advantages is that you will obtain the Weyl rescalings at the boundary that will be generated by purely radial bulk diffeomorphism. So we will not have here the mixing with the transverse components. And also you will induce on the boundary a full Weyl geometry. So you will have a boundary metric and also a boundary Weyl connection. And the question that we will ask at the end of reviewing all the steps is to determine if this restored Weyl structure is associated or not with a physical asymptotic symmetry. Okay, so let's move on to this part and to review the first advantage of this Weyl Pfefferman-Graham ansatz. So now if we make a radial rescaling in this form, the Weyl Pfefferman-Graham gauge will be preserved under these transformations. So we don't have here the mixing with the transverse components, and it will preserve the Weyl Pfefferman-Graham ansatz in such a way that the subleading orders, well, the orders of the Ki and Hij structure, will transform as Weyl tensors with a Weyl weight that will be given by the function B. And in fact, it will be okay for all the orders of your expansion, except for the leading term in Ki that will transform with an inhomogeneous term, and it will transform rather as a Weyl connection with this type of expression. Okay, so we have seen here the first advantage of the Weyl Pfefferman-Graham ansatz, and the second one we will look at it by determining a Weyl covariant derivative that will boundary that will parallel transpose the boundary metric. And the way to see that is to, for example, to choose this here, the dual forms and vector basis for the Weiffel-Mangram ansatz. So here we have our ansatz. When you come to obtain here this dual form and vector basis for this ansatz. And then we can look at the induced bulk levity-shifter connection in the frame d rho di. And let me also mention that the basis d rho and di will span the tangent space at any point of your bulk manifold. And also, this basis di will span two-dimensional distribution on your bulk manifold. And so if you use the standard definition of your coefficients of Levi-Strauss connection in this frame, you will obtain here this expression where the coefficients here will give you, will describe the coefficient structure of the Levi-Strauss connection on your distribution di. And if you look at the leading order of this expression, you will obtain here a torsion-free connection with a Weyl metricity. Okay, and after that, we can so define our Weyl covariant derivative. So by looking at the induced connection, how it acts on the boundary metric. And then we can define it in this way on a generic Weyl weight omega t tensor of an arbitrary type. In such a way that your Weyl covariant connection is metric, and when it is applied to a generic tensor, it is Weyl covariant. And then with this connection, you can construct all your geometric quantities in such a way that it will be Weyl covariant. So in conclusion of these three slides, we have seen that Weyl Feffer-Mangram gauge is equipped with a full Weyl geometry at the boundary. So we have the boundary metric and also a boundary Weyl connection. Let me also mention that the Feffer-Mangram gauge was constructed in the ambient space, and you can also motivate this type of construction in the ambient space, for example, here in the paper of Gia, Claridas, and Rob.
So just so now, Einstein's equation, what are they going to impose? Do they impose any constraints on the Weyl connection, or
No, it will be a kinematical. So you will not have some constraints by the Einstein equation on it.
So, for example, the curvature of the Weyl connection, is it zero? Just it can be anything. There is no.
No, the curvature of the Weyl connection. Yeah, it can be everything. But if you go, if you take it to zero, you will go back to the Feffer-Mangram ansatz.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But in principle, at this stage, there is no constraint whatsoever.
Yes. Okay, so now that we have this Weyl Feffer-Mangram gauge, and that we have seen some advantages of why we have to choose maybe rather this gauge than the Feffer-Mangram one, we can determine if this restored Weyl structure is associated to a physical asymptotic symmetry or not. And so we will also discuss what is the solution space of this bulk metric, as well as the residual isometries. So in this way, in this Weyl Feffer-Mangram gauge, we will obtain an infinite expansion also in three dimensions. In the Feffer-Mangram case, we had only the first three terms and not the sub leading terms. But in this case, you will also have the sub leading terms because the Weyl structure will have some sub leading terms that will contribute to this one. And we can already see in the first orders, well, here we also take the conformal gauge for the boundary metric. And we can also, we can already see here for the second order how the first, the leading order of the Ki will contribute here in the solution space for the second order. And it will be also the same for the fourth order, where you will have also K2 that will appear and etc., etc., for the subsubleading terms. Okay, so after that, you can also study what are the residual symmetries of this solution space by looking at the diffeomorphism that will preserve the gauge fixing and the boundary conditions that you have imposed. And you will obtain, again, here the boundary diffeomorphism as well as the Weyl reskinnings. But now you will also have this new symmetry parameter, which will be related here by, to the gauge parameter associated to here the Weyl connection. And in principle, you will also have some here, some subleading terms for the residual symmetries that will be where the subleading terms of the Weyl structure will contribute to them.
The new parameter is H.
Yes, in fact, H, I will look maybe, well, H if you want, I can write it.
And so you're saying it's changing the K by a pure gauge transformation?
Yes, and the K is related to the Weyl connection. In this way, so you have that the gauge transformation of your Weyl connection is the little h. And so it will modify here your, well, in Fefferman-Graham gauge, we only have here the first derivative of the Weyl rescalings. But here you have also this Weyl, this gauge parameter associated to the Weyl connection. Okay, and if you look at the algebra of such residual symmetries, you will obtain again the two-width algebra with the Weyl rescalings and also this new U1 algebra. Due to this little h. And in principle, you will also have some order algebra related to the subleading terms, to the subleading terms in the gauge parameter for the subleading terms here in chi I. Okay. And then after that, you can also look at your action. Actual variational principle. So you will have again here the three first same terms that in Fefferman-Graham ansatz. But the difference with Fefferman-Graham is that here you will have the Weyl covariant Ricci scala of the boundary metric. And you need also to add this type of term to ensure the finiteness of your renormalized action when you have this Ki structure in your gauge. And if you look at the renormalized presymplectic potential, you will obtain a description in terms of the delta of the source multiplied by the VEV. And here you can see that you will obtain that you have a new source, which is the Weyl connection, and the current associated will be on-shell equivalent to the Weyl connection. And after that, you can also look, well, at your Ward identities by looking at the on-shell variation of your action under the boundary diffeomorph, the bulk diffeomorphisms that we have seen. And for the boundary diffeomorphisms, you will obtain here that the conservation of your stress energy momentum tensor is modified by the presence of the Weyl connection, where F here is the curvature associated to this Weyl connection. And if you look at the on-shell variation under boundary Weyl transformations, you will obtain again that you have an anomalous trace for your stress energy, energy momentum tensor. But now you can see that this trace is a Weyl covariantized by the Weyl connection. But if you look at the surface charges that you can obtain under such such residual symmetries, you will obtain the same charge that was discussed in the Fefferman-Graham ansatz. So this means that in this theory that we have described up to now, the Weyl connection is not associated with an asymptotic symmetry. So this means that the whole varied geometrification of the theory that we have made until now is free, in the sense that it will not enlarge the physical space of states that we will describe at the boundary.
So then, from an ADS-CFT perspective, this JI, how am I supposed to think of it? Is a new current compared to the, I guess, I don't know the weight of this delta.
Well, for the moment, here, as you can just quotient it out by a trivial diffeomorphism, where you don't really have a current associated, because it will be trivial. So since you don't have a charge associated to it, so you don't have an observable that will be sensitive to the presence of this vial connection. So for the moment, you just have a vial covariantization of your theory for free. But we will see in a few moments that you can modify your theory with some terms where you will now have the presence of the vial connection. And so you will be able to describe in holographic terms, the presence or not of this type of current. And in fact, if you look at the rewriting of the Shen-Simons theory as a gauge of the gravitation theory in 3D as a Shen-Simons theory, since the 3D gravity has a topological nature, so by looking here, in order to do these steps, you need to look at the isometry algebra of ADS3, which is SO22, where the MA are the Lorentz generators and the PA are the translation generators. And then you go in the dry bind of first order formalism, where E is the dry bind, eta is the Minkowski metric, and omega is the associated dualized spin connection, you can rewrite the Einstein gravitation as a Shen-Simons gauge theory, where your Shen-Simons connection will be a combination of the dry bind and the spin connection. And then with this expression for the Einstein-Hilbert action, you can again look at the different steps that we have made in the metric formalism. So by looking at the Einstein equations that are rewritten in Shen-Simons term as the flatness curvature of the Shen-Simons connection. So we'll have to solve this type of equation. And then you can also look at the equivalent of the residual diffeomorphism that will be here residual gauge parameters. So in the sense that the gauge transformation of the vial of the Shen-Simons connection is given by d lambda plus commutator of lambda a. And you can also relate your gauge parameter with the diffeomorphism that you obtain by contracting it with the inverse of the dry bind. And then you can also determine what is the surface charges of your theory by looking at the presymplectic potential, which is given here for such an action. If I forget the factor 1 over 60 pi, it will be given by minus the trace of A wedge delta A. And then if you take the same step of the coherent phase space formalism, that in the second order formulation, you can also determine what is the renormalized presymplectic current associated to it. And then if you integrate it on the Cauchy surface, you will obtain your surface charges here. And we see here in Shen-Simons theory, well, we recover the same first terms than in the metric formulation, but we have also now the presence of the vial connection and its gauge parameter.
So you can see charge this thing only in the Shen-Simons formulation?
Well, we will see in the next few slides that you can also see it from the metric formation by adding some boundary term of your on your action. So yes, indeed, we have to understand something more from the holographic perspective, since in the Shan-Simons theory and in the metric theory, we have two different charges. And in fact, if you take your renormalized action here, what you can always do with such an expression is to add a finite boundary term or a finite corner term. And we will see that there is two prescriptions that we describe to obtain these new charges that are present in Shan-Simons theory. So the first one is to consider a finite boundary term that will be described by the boundary geometry, so the boundary metric and the boundary value connection. And if we choose this type of boundary contour term, where here we go in the limit rho going to zero when one approaches the boundary, we will be able to obtain again the precipitate potential and the charges. And we will obtain the same charge that in the Shan-Simons theory. And the holographic description that we can do with such a boundary contour term, if you look at the precipitic potential, we still have the description in terms of delta of the source multiplied by the VEV. So we still have here the boundary metric for the first source, as well as an improvement of the stress energy momentum tensor. And we still have also here the description of the source for the Weyl connection with here this improvement also of the Weyl current. So here we have that we have a new current at the boundary. It is expressed in terms of this Weyl connection. Okay. Yes. And we can also see, let me also mention that this boundary contour term is not covariant with respect to the boundary diffeomorphism. So it means that in this first prescription to obtain the chance, the same charge than in Shan-Simons theory, you have a sort of trade-off here, in the sense that you will obtain these charges at the expense of having a non-covariant holographic renormalization. But we can also see another option, which is to add a finite corner contour term to the action, which will be given by the corner contribution of the bulk precipitic potential, as discussed in the paper of Robert McNeice and Céline. So you consider this type of corner contour term that you can add, that will be also described by the boundary geometry. And you have here your corner action. And here you can see that it is, contrary to the previous one, it is covariant with respect to the boundary diffeomorphism. And you can also obtain the new charges that were obtained in the Shan-Simons theory. But here with the drawback that if you look at the precipitic potential, you still have here the source associated with the boundary metric and an improvement of the stress energy momentum tensor. But here you don't have only the Weyl connection as the source, but the Weyl connection which is dressed by a pure gauge, a Weyl pure gauge shift. So it means that in order to recover the Shan-Simons charge, starting from the Einstein, the metric formalism, whether you have to obtain a non-covariant renormalization of your theory, but you have an expression of the source in terms of the Weyl connection, or you will have a covariant renormalization, but not only the Weyl connection as the source, but it will also be modified by the presence of the boundary metric. Okay, so let me make a summary of what we have seen and also discuss some future possibilities of this talk. So the main idea of this talk was to explore the charges of three-dimensional gravity in a new setup, the Weyl-Fermat-Graham gauge. And we obtained that in this setup, it is preferable with respect to the Fermat-Graham one, because we restore your Weyl covariance or your Weyl covariance of the boundary. You will also obtain new residual symmetries, surface charges, and anomalies associated to it. For example, the Weyl anomaly will be Weyl covariantized. And you can also see that depending on your theory that you choose, for example, if you consider the Shen-Simons theory for your three-dimensional gravity, or if you add the boundary term or the corner term that we have seen in the next last slide, we can see that if you want to go to the Fermat-Graham ansatz, you will constrain the physical solution space. So it means that you can make a new holographic dictionary of your theory where the charges and the observables associated to the Weyl connection will play a role in your dual theory. Okay. Let me also mention some future possibilities of this talk. The first one is to, there is a lot of other gauge relaxation proposals in the literature. For example, here I discussed the Fermat-Graham ansatz, but there is also the Bondi gauge, and there is also a lot of discussion of how we can relax this Bondi gauge for the moment in three dimensions. There is also some discussion on 4D or IRD. But there is already a lot of discussion in three dimensions, so it will be nice to have some explicit diffeomorphism between these gauges and in order to make a sort of synthesis of all these relaxations. Another interesting perspective is to extend our discussion to higher dimensions. Since here we discuss only three dimensions, so at the boundary, your boundary is always conformally flat. So you have that you will have your full conformal isometries group at the boundary. But in IRD, for example, in 4D, there is some cases where where the boundary is not conformally flat. For example, when the Cotton tensor is non-zero. And so it will be also interesting to discuss how we can obtain the asymptotic symmetries in these cases, because in this case you will still have the presence of the Weyl symmetry, since it is only reside in the fact that the conformal boundary sits at the conformal infinity. So it means that you have a theory with a Weyl symmetry in a curved spacetime, so you have a Weyl field theory, and so it can be interesting to look at 4D to obtain some insights on such a theory where there is not much that are known for the moment in these theories. And there is also the perspective of coupling the gravity with the higher spins. It's also interesting for the quantum gravity in the sense that the higher spin theory are supposed to be consistent quantum theories, and so to give examples of the quantum gravity theories. And in 3D, it's pretty simple to couple the gravity to higher spins. For example, for the Shen-Simons connection, for the Shen-Simons formulation, you can have that, the isometry algebra of ADS3 is SO22, but it is isomorphic to SL to R direction with SL to R. And there is some prescription to describe the coupling of the gravity with higher spins in this Shen-Simons theory by just looking at a Shen-Simons connection which will not take value in these algebras, but rather in SLNR plus SLNR for an higher spin of a spin N. In this case, it is pretty simple. And also, in this case, you don't have to take an infinite value of spin to have a consistent theory. And so it will be good to discuss what is the Weil-Pfeffermann-Gram gauge in this theory in order to have some insights on the dual theory of this higher spin theory. OK. Thank you. Any question?
I have questions. Yeah. So just to summarize, so you had this extended gauge, extended symmetries, and then some prescription for the contour terms in the action. Then you find, okay, I don't see them in the charges, right? They have zero charge in the beginning, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you say, okay, but if I work in transient and I see them, so how can I modify my
exactly yes
to see them? And then you had two options. The first one was breaking covariance with respect to the boundary,
yes.
And the other option was not. But I didn't get what was the drawback.
The drawback was that you don't have only. You don't have only the Weyl connection, but a Weyl pure gauge shift of your Weyl connection for the source.
A Weyl pure gauge shift.
Yeah, so this source is now Weyl invariant. So it is the drawback.
So what's the problem with this? Well, isn't the connection determined modulo? If it's a connection, it's not a tensor, right?
Yes.
So it's usually defined up to total derivative. Anyway, why is that a problem?
Well, for me, it's a problem because you don't have only here your Weyl connection, but you will obtain here a source that will be Weyl invariant. So for me, it's the problem of this description.
So the source will be Weyl invariant. So that's even better.
So. No. Maybe if I may ask, my perspective on that is that it's not a drawback. I would say actually it's a fact, it's a feature, and actually this is kind of a gauge. It's a typical thing one do when dressing. There are two things though. The first one is that you have a source which is not fully independent from the other source. So H0 appears in both terms. And you may think that I haven't isolated the independent sources. That might be a feature. Again, I don't want to say drew
maybe
that, can
that
be
you
just
took
live.
A wrong definition. The K was
it's,
not the right, the small k
right,
was
exactly,
not the right one.
Exactly. And the second thing is that in this kind of theories, you can, for instance, do Einstein-Maxwell. So you can couple a new field. And when you do Einstein-Maxwell at the SFT, you would see A0 appearing. And A0 plays the exact same role of K0 here. And that is not dressed as an independent source. So again, not a drawback, but if you compare, you would expect that. So in the old papers I wrote, I was expecting K0, I proposed K0. And now I see that it's not K0. Again, it's not a drawback, it's a feature. Yes.
I think a feature that maybe, it's the fact that we add a corner term. So like the SC is something living at the corner. And I think from the more traditional EDS safety people, it's how do you interpret like entering something at the corner. So they usually define some boundary term over the full boundary. So it's more a question for them, how to make sense of adding such corner term. So I think that's my question I have for them. So, sorry. But that's something that maybe they are not happy about, which I don't know.
So it's a corner, so it's a total derivative.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then usually in ADS-CFT, you will have VEV times source over all the boundary. So how do you interpret this corner term? And I think that's an interesting question to do, how to do a holography with corner.
Okay, but then the second question is related to this. How am I, again, to the same question as, but how am I supposed to think of this new current in the dual theory?
Hey, for the moment, we don't know. We just made some initial step to describe this theory, but we need to make more explanations in terms of the holographic description. Mm. For the moment, we don't know.
It's a dimension one current, right? I mean, it's just
two.
Dimension two?
Yes,
J-I?
It's marginal. Yeah, it's going to be marginal. If you want, that's one of the things that I'm still thinking about. If you want to think about how this would affect the CFT, it's going to be a marginal deformation.
Sorry, you have an equation which is divergence of J is T. So T is dimension 2 and J has to be dimension 1.
No, because J index up has the same dimension as T index up and index down, not T indices up.
So can you go back to the, okay, there was an equation relating J and T. The flux equation for
go
G.
Go down again, previous. Here.
Yes.
This is T up down is nabla J up down. So that's how he gets 2-2. There is actually a work which is an unpublished note by Glenn Barnish, Blaja, Lagoje Oblak, and Gonzalez, I think, I'm not remembering the third person. In which they show, well, I mean, they just go a step farther in the Gauss decomposition from the trans-Simon point of view. They show that this can be understood as a marginal deformation, but it's an unpublished note because indeed they were not completely sure of what is the effect yet. Hmm. And actually, it's a question that I had asked to people that know very well from the CFT perspective. I don't know yet. It would be nice if you have an idea, Laura, of what it could be. Maybe the last thing, the equation in the middle there, from the CFT point of view, it means that the stress tensor is not conserved, but it's not conservation, is a divergence. Mm-hmm. It's something to do with the virial theorem. It's what is called virial theorem in CFTs, that when the trace of the stress tensor is the divergence of something, you can sort of improve it, kind of a la Belifante, to make it traceless, but this happens only when there are no coordinates, when you can freely integrate the divergence. So here we're adding a corner Lagrangian, so there are many layers of things that maybe are. That's it. Again.
Sorry.
I'm just really confused.
I have a last question, but maybe it's technical, I don't know. But it's often the case that when you work in trans-Simon, you see you see some non-zero charges due to some symmetries, but if you were to work in the metric formulation, you could interpret these symmetries as some sort of field-dependent aseptic symmetries. I mean, this is what Grumiller likes to do. I was wondering, instead of doing all this deformation of the adding the corner term, could you see this from the face, from the space-time perspective? You guys know what I mean. You know what I mean, right? Because Grumiller likes to do.
That's a good question.
Okay.
I don't know.
It will be great.
Okay.
No questions, let's thank then.